This is the Diabetic Show, featuring Mark Philwood and Dobie Maxwell, right here on WGTD, featuring all things diabetic.
And welcome to the Diabetic Show. My name is Mark Philwood, type 1 since 1987. My co-host, you might remember him as voted the nicest man of the century. But unfortunately, that was last century, but he's working on it. He's
19 years, Dobie Maxwell, type 2, riding sidecar. We're glad you're here on the Diabetic Show today. We've got a special guest for you a little bit later, and we're discussing the disease that makes summertime more difficult, because everything's sweet in the summer, isn't it?
Isn't it, though? Mm-hmm. Yes. And the person we'll be speaking with, Maria, I'm going to screw the last name here, Muscioli. Muscioli. Very good.
Yes.
The Italian names, you have to say it with joy.
I don't know if she was from the north or the south of Italy,
but
we'll ask her.
Either. Yeah, we'll definitely hit it. She's a writer for Diabetes Daily. Just a great, tell it like it is reporter. That's the way I would describe Maria's writing. We'll be talking about insulin prices. Why the insulin prices?
She's the Geraldo Rivera of diabetic reporting.
As well as a full-time biology professor, proud mom of a toddler, and also a type 1. Type 1 diabetic. So we'll see.
I'll let you ask the questions.
No, but you just hold my hand with this. This is, whenever we talk to PhDs, it's quite intimidating because, well, you know.
When you got the letters after it.
Yeah. Yeah. And here I am, you know, with
I'm DOA.
Oh, God. Someday. I'm leaning towards that. Anyway, let's get some news here. And most of the news, well, most of the news is always bad here, people who do night shifts or night shifts and day shifts. In other words, if your daily schedule is off, you know, little nights, little days, little nights, little days, you have a much better chance of getting sick and being diabetic. This is a...
Oh, there's so much bad health that goes on there, not just diabetes.
Exactly. But the unhealthy lifestyle habits apparently... Shifts, changing of shifts from night to day or first to second to third shift and back and forth, very high risk of, well, most diseases that we're talking about, type 2 in particular for this research, in particular carried out by U.S., Chinese, and Austrian researchers, studies produced in the British Medical Journal. It looked at long-term data, and this is always good when you're looking at numbers over decades as far as people, what they do.
Don't we all?
And how they get there from here.
I've been stalking my high school girlfriend for many long-term data.
It's only stalking if you're arrested.
Yeah.
So, glasses half full.
You know, her husband won't let us use the car. Come on. What's wrong with that?
So a lot of these studies started in 1976 and 1989, and these researchers are going through it. Started off with 143,000, and this is women now. Just this study is only with women. Mm-hmm. I would imagine men similar. Close, but
no, this is not it.
This is just women. They were looking at women without any diabetic activities at all, no cardiovascular disease, no cancer. They completed all their questionnaires at regular intervals. Now, basically, for this study, it was nurses. They were looking mainly at nurses throughout the continents. They're selected due to their changing roles and their changing times, and especially with the role of a nurse, I can imagine the shifts. I mean. Now, granted, when we did our radio, we started off with most of us started off overnight. Now, you were a star.
I was on a morning show.
Yeah, you were a star from the get-go.
But still, you get up at 3, 4 in the morning.
Which is overnight.
And I did stand-up comedy at the time, so I would stay up all night, do comedy, stay up all night and prepare for the morning show, and then get off. So technically, I was a third shifter. And then I would go to bed at 9 or 10 in the morning, and then people would start calling at 11 o'clock. What are you sleeping, you lazy bum? Well, I'll call you at 4 in the morning and see how interrupt your snoring pattern.
So the lifestyle is Dobie described.
Think about this, though. Anybody listening, think about anybody in third shift. Those people are not normal.
No.
Look at the average person that were, no offense.
No.
But they're woodwork squeaks, out come the freaks. And I mean that with respect.
He means it with respect.
In a friendly, in a customer service kind of a way. Those people are not normal. And I was one of them for years, and I still am.
It's
but
true.
But think about it. You don't get a lot of sunshine. You're sleeping during that time.
The gist of it is, after at least 5 years of working night shifts to day shifts, every 5 years, you have a 30% chance higher to be conditioned with type 2 diabetes. So every 5 years you're doing this, you're another third up. Is it getting it?
Yeah. Did you know that the hour between 4 and 5 a.m. is they call it the witching hour. More babies are born and more people pass away in that particular hour between 4 and 5 a.m. Most of the public is not even awake then. Those of us who are, that's an eerie, weird time.
Grandma said nothing good happens at 4 in the morning.
Well, I'm telling you. Mm. Out in front of a bar.
So, well, yeah, but she stopped that when she retired. Anyway, and now
Grandma never went to a bar. She had her flask and her purse at church.
It makes in the straw.
Mm-hmm.
So the gist of it is, out of this study, over 25 years of looking at this data, out of those 143,000 nurses, 12,000 got type 2 diabetes. Now, if they were in regular jobs or regular shifts, that number would have been 3,000. So that gives you an idea of how the longer you work those weird hours, the better chance you have.
So what we're telling you in a friendly way is get a normal job.
Yes, and don't go into radio. It just
No. That's the last thing you want to do.
No, at least with nursing, you got a place to fall.
Our guest Maria,
I see. Do you see?
I know. I didn't want to say.
He was doing so well before the
Luciano.
Show. Musioli.
Musioli, the cousins of the Musianos,
right down the street.
She's coming up to join us. It's a very interesting young lady.
Used to play stickball.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, you got to get to the website, thediabeticshow.com, a Facebook page, The Diabetic Show. Feel free to leave a comment.
Question us, scold us, reprimand us, rebuke us.
We're your Play-Doh.
We are here for you.
And we'll be right back with Maria. We'll be talking about the cost of insulin. Oh, actually, are we about ready to do the break there? If it wasn't for Troy. Anyway, we'll take the break. Thanks for listening to The Diabetic Show. Welcome back to The Diabetic Show. My name is Mark Philwitt, proud type 1 since 1987.
My name is Dobie Maxwell, ashamed type 2, but we're working on it. We're glad you're here today. It's time for our special guest.
It's a process, really. It's a day by
day. I'm working on it, man.
Anyway, very special guest today. We over these many years, we say that now, over these many years that we've been doing this, and Troy, you're right there with us too, by the way. I'm going to get all emotional. We talk a lot about insulin prices. And in the years that we've been doing this show, it's jumped. In the last 4 years, no matter what segment of the calendar you look at, the prices of insulin have jumped. And all the different online resources you would have being a diabetic, reading news and things. One writer I love to read, Maria Musioli.
Uh-huh.
I said that right. Maria, a special guest today. I read your stuff at diabetesdaily.com. Maria, thank you so much for joining us today, and we really do enjoy your work on the line.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to hear that.
Now, what really got me as far as your stories were, you just say it the way it is. You lay it out cleanly and purely, and then you let people digest it and take it for what it's worth. But when it comes to insulin and insulin prices, well, first off, let's talk a little bit about you. Maria, a full-time biology professor, proud mom of a young toddler. Maria, you're diagnosed with type 1 diabetes as an undergraduate. And,
yes.
And that kind of got you to where you are today?
Yes. So I had just recently declared my biochemistry major as a freshman, and I was actually, it was a little bit of self-diagnosis going on as I was reading in my textbook about the symptoms of type 1 diabetes and realizing that I have been checking off every single one of those boxes for quite some time, and eventually diagnosed actually with an A1C of over 18.
Ooh.
And it must have been slowly progressing because it was a miracle to me that I was walking around at that point. But thankfully, no long-term damage whatsoever. I bounced back, and that was back in 2008. So it definitely shaped my career. I ended up getting an internship with Abcam in Cambridge. They're an antibody company, so I learned a lot about immunology there during my internship. And then when it was time for graduate work, I ended up joining a cancer immunology laboratory. So I learned a little bit more about the immune system there. And then I did a little bit of multiple sclerosis work during my second postdoc at Brigham Women's Harvard Medical. So I have a bit of a background in immunology, and I definitely credit it to my diagnosis. But my real passion and job is writing for Diabetes Daily because it doesn't feel like work to me, you know. So teaching pays the bills, but this is my passion job. So
I got to say, Maria, an A1C of 18, that could be a record setter. We always ask people to stretch the limits here. You could be up for the Guinness Book of, oh, my gosh, how did I live to morning?
Oh, my God.
And believe it or not, through the Diabetes Online community, I have met several others who have also been off the charts at over 18 at diagnosis. So
wow.
I'm not the only one, but I recognize, yeah. How
you may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one.
Okay, so basically you get just all the frequent thirst, frequent urination, terrible sleep. Did you lose a lot of weight before you were diagnosed as well?
Yep. I did. I went from within about a year. I was playing college tennis as a freshman. Within about a year, I went from about 125 pounds down to about 95 pounds. And I got to the point where size zero was loose on me. So I think, you know, it became noticeable to everyone that something was going on. And it took, you know, it took a little bit of coming out of denial to, you know, get the diagnosis and move forward. But
well, it's funny. We're in Wisconsin where we have people that have lunch boxes that weigh 95 pounds.
So it's all lifestyle. It's now in all the setting up with the interview. Where are we speaking to? Where are you from today?
I currently live in southern New Hampshire.
Oh, okay.
And I work remotely, so I'm back in New England. I did my graduate work in Ohio, but after 6 years in Ohio, I'm back in New England over the last several years.
It's really funny, speaking of diabetes, I'm a stand-up comedian. I tour around, and I wanted to go to the New England states because I'd never been there before. And it was in New Hampshire, coincidentally. I had the best maple syrup I've ever had in my entire life, which I think gave me type 3 diabetes. It was my blood sugar had a comma in it when I was done with my breakfast. But it's the best. I mean, you know, sugar's everywhere.
Yeah. But now, I have to ask you, when we get to the insulin here, in your short time being a diabetic, the prices have jumped, what, 2-3-fold perhaps? I mean, first off, what led you to addressing this situation besides having to buy the insulin yourself?
So I've been, you know, I'm pretty fortunate when it comes to my own insurance policy. I can't say I've ever struggled to afford insulin, with the exception of maybe just a few times in my college years, but really overall I consider myself fairly lucky. But I'm actively involved in the Diabetes Online community through various channels, Facebook in particular, and Twitter, and I'm just constantly seeing people struggling, saying they're going, even today I saw a story about a woman who had run out of insulin and she wasn't able to get her prescription. She ended up buying the what she called Walmart insulin, and we were trying to help her figure out if it was R or N, because she said that after 6 hours she experienced a drop, which sounded like N to me, but
right.
People seem to think that it was R, but it sounded like she didn't know what she got, and it was good that she got something, but you know,
better than nothing, sure.
She wasn't sure how to use it, how it was different than what she was usually using, and, you know, of course, yes, if you know how to properly use RNN, you can do very well, and some people do very well, and I've also used those insulins in the past. But at the same time, it's not just about survival, right? It comes down to also patient convenience and quality of life, which is extremely suffering, not to mention the death, but, you know, not being able to afford the products that are out there that your physician agrees you should use, that you have or you had been using for years and are now unable to afford, is definitely a problem, to say the least.
Well, so as
just,
you mentioned,
yeah, being a, mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt. As you mentioned, those two insulins, R and N, and or NPH, it depends who you're speaking with, but R would be the shorter acting, where it would maybe start kicking in between about 1 hour. It starts getting into the system and it kind of hangs around 4 or 5 or so. The N is more of the long acting, like you were saying, more of a gradual release, hangs around a lot longer, like 8-12 hours. It's been a long time since I've used it. But I guess the point that you're bringing up is, now these are older insulins. They still work fantastic. And they, thank goodness, are still, well, I hate to use the word affordable because that's such a, you know, it might affordable to one isn't affordable to two, but at least $30 a vial, more, much better than the $300 to $400 to $500. It just boggles the mind. So Where's the problem lie? Let me ask you the $64,000 question right off the bat. Is this where it's just uncontrolled greed, or is this just research and development costs? I mean, if you look at it, there's very few products that have taken the consumer price index and just kind of laughed at it and went on its merry way, where it's going 2, 3, 4 times what the CPI is moving. What's your opinion?
So I think there are two major problems when it comes specifically to insulin that's prescription only. So as you know, RNN is actually available, I believe, in almost every state without a prescription. So
yes.
Oftentimes you don't even have the involvement of insurance companies and PBMs. It can be sold directly to consumer, right? So when we get to prescription-only drugs, whether it's insulin or other drugs, so first point I want to bring up is competition. So obviously many drugs have generics, and once that generic becomes available, and I've been a pharmacy technician, I've seen the actual stickers on the wholesale drugs and seeing how much the cost to the pharmacy from the manufacturer differed between, say, brand name Lipitor and atorvastatin calcium when it came out, it was not a 15% difference. It was night and day. We're talking pennies on the dollar.
Right.
So that brings, so the lack of competition, because it is considered a biosimilar as opposed to a generic, for good reason, because the manufacturing process is vastly different. However, speaking as a biologist, I can't say that the process of insulin production is so difficult that it necessitates, that it should necessitate so many costs to prove to the FDA that, in fact, it is a comparable product. I'm just not seeing that part. So as far as the solution to the lack of competition, I think something would have to come from the FDA saying, we're going to make this process easier. Now, they've made some steps, but I don't think there's been enough. So when we see something like Admelog coming out, it's only 15% difference in price from the Humalog. I really think that comes down to their cost and, again, proving to the FDA that it's comparable and research and development, et cetera, et cetera. So that's definitely part of the problem. And then again, as you've probably read, there's the whole complex system of setting the prices when you have the PBMs that are in the middle of everyone. And it's really not transparent how the prices are being set. And a lot of people, of course, believe that there's price fixing going on because the market is dominated by three companies. So these two issues, I think, are sort of interconnected and at the root of the problem.
Do you have a gut feeling on that? What's your feeling?
About price fixing?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think we know. I don't particularly have a gut feeling. It's definitely in the realm of possibility. It's not unheard of in any business. It's not unheard of in history. Therefore, I don't see why it couldn't.
I hate to say, I'm a cynic. I totally think there is, but I'm going to go on record as saying I do. But I do. I try to be upbeat and positive. But anytime there's money, the criminal element gets yeah. in, and innocent people suffer.
Well, here's the thing. What you bring up, Maria, it's just right on the mark. There are three, two in the top of my head: Lilly and Sanofi. Do you know what the third one is up top of your head?
Novo Nordisk.
That's there. You always forget that one. It's harder to say too. But yeah, you have three large manufacturers covering almost literally 100% of the market. Yes, you got R out there and N, which are kind of out there for the people that hopefully can afford that. But well, here, let me give you an example. Interesting here. Then we'll take a break, Troy. Give me a second here. But there are people that, in particular, the story I'm reading here, people from Minnesota writing, they're part of a insulin for the number four, all initiative. They had a caravan to Canada, Dobie. This is wonderful. They drove 5 hours in a bus to purchase insulin. Mm-hmm. They just go across the border to a whole other country with their passport.
Like a casino run.
There you go. Mm-hmm. $30 a vial instead of the $300. Just south of the border, if you were, say, stopping.
Wow.
I know. So their biggest concern, Maria, with these people doing the caravans, the drive back when they cross back into the U.S., if it's legal or illegal, which is kind of one of those up in the airs, I guess.
Right.
I imagine if you buy it for yourself, hey, well, you're buying it for yourself. So how does it go that way where Canada would have something along the lines of, I think it's called like a patented medicine prices review board? In other words, they had a government entity that would say, well, yeah, good price? No, not good price. And we don't have that here.
Yeah, I think wasn't that the idea behind PBMs was to help drive the prices down for consumers?
Theoretically.
Theoretically.
Yeah, but without those gap measures, all I know is because we've reached out to Lilly, Santa Fe, all of them. No, nobody's gotten back to us yet. Troy, did you check today? Did you check the super secret email that we only give Hollywood stars and CEOs? No? Okay. But well, at least up to today, nobody's gotten back to us. Over years, they're kind of, well, it's a good idea. I did get one of those cover letters the very first time, and they actually wished us luck on the show, which is very good. But they haven't gotten back to me on the insulin pricing. I tell you what, Maria, let's take the break here. We'll come back. I do want to touch up again on alternatives or maybe just something that can help somebody out there who might not have the advocates on their side or the resources available to them, okay? So we'll take the break right here, The Diabetic Show. Maria Muscioli. One out of three. Yeah.
That's the pasta special down at Olive Garden for lunch.
You set it up.
I'm sorry. No, no.
Maria's
no
not
offense.
Coming back.
She's coming back.
There. No, she's not.
She's
there.
Russian.
Trust me, my native name was more difficult to pronounce.
Could you say it? Was it a good Scrabble word?
It was. It was Nevichiba.
Oh, Gesundheit.
Yeah.
Any Z's and K's and Y's in there? That's a beautiful.
Well, take
a lot of
while we ponder.
We'll come right back on The Diabetic Show.
Welcome back to The Diabetic Show. Mark Philwett, type 1.
Dobie Maxwell, type 2. We have a special guest today. We're getting all kinds of important information.
And by the way, any questions that we forget to ask Maria, you can always contact her at Diabetes Daily. A great resource. Mm-hmm. Any level diabetic would definitely love this website. A lot of resources there as well.
Make your writing part of your input in the diabetic field. It's very. I was fascinated by writing. Down to earth, you're like the scoop reporter, you know, kind of the, you know, what'd you call it? The undercover, you know.
Well, not
the troubleshooter.
Geez, they say it the way it is.
That's the thing. People don't, they say it the way it is. You got to just bear down and let it rip.
So again, we welcome Maria Muscioli on the show. Maria, how important is insulin? Now, we've talked during the break as far as, you know, how you can compare insulin to other drugs as far as how badly you need it as opposed to, say, a blood pressure medicine or a cholesterol pill. But it's hard to find a comparison. I mean, insulin, well, it's life.
It is. It is, especially, you know, for people with established type 1 diabetes who make zero insulin. So I was struggling to find a comparable, honestly, other than something as essential as water, because you can't really go 2 days, 3 days without being in serious, serious trouble without any insulin as a type 1. In contrast, you know, if your doctor prescribes you an expensive statin that you're waiting on a prior authorization for from your insurance company, I think it's okay to wait a week. You know, if you can't afford your And I'm not giving medical advice here, by the way, but if you can't afford your blood pressure pill, odds are you're not going to, you know, have the kind of outcome that you're going to have if you forego your insulin for several days as somebody with type 1 diabetes. So although, you know, everybody wants to make a profit and they all fall into the same category of a prescription drug, insulin really stands out in that regard and probably is the main reason why the patents were originally sold for what they were sold for. Because it truly is life-saving.
$1. $1.
Canadian.
Canadian, even.
A loony.
So, yeah, and it goes from that to, what, $85, $95, over $100 billion a year, Maria? The numbers are just, they boggle. They're hard to wrap your mind around those types of zeros. But now, what you're saying, with the insulin being such a vital component of a diabetic's life, doesn't that give it any protections?
Well, at this time, it doesn't, right?
Right. I mean, here we are.
Not legally. I mean, Colorado recently passed a big measure that was big news, capping the price at $100, I believe, per month, regardless of the amount of insulin used by the patient, which I think, you know, I don't think they'll be the only ones. I think we will see other steps like that. But you know, for some people, even $100. I mean, if you lack the means, then $100 could be too much. And people are actively rationing their insulin. I believe it's estimated that one in four people are foregoing or, you know, insulin injections to some degree due to financial constraints.
Stupid question. Do you think some sort of a telethon or a fundraiser or something for concerned people. There's so many causes, I realize that, but diabetes is a pretty widespread disease in the 21st century. There might be something that maybe big companies, big somebody could donate. Seriously, there's people out in the hills, you know, hillbillies that need it and don't have it.
Sure, and there are a number of initiatives that could be brought forward. I think there are resources on the local level. For example, I think I was going through a health insurance gap at one point as a student. I think it was for a very brief period of time, right around the time I turned 26. You know, I was getting off my parents' insurance. I was waiting for my coverage to get established. So I asked my endocrinologist, what do I do? And he said, well, in our case, we have a clinic on a bus, and you can come, and it's free. And we can give you samples, you know, for example. So that was my short-term plan. So that was something that, you know, I learned was available in my area for people in need. I don't think I had to use it, but I knew that that was there if I had needed extra insulin during that month, for example. I think, you know, in addition to raising money, also just patient education about the resources that are available is vital, and could definitely prevent tragedies in the future if people are aware of resources. And I'm not saying there are enough resources. There are definitely not enough resources. But sometimes it's especially tragic, I think, when there are resources and people aren't aware.
Well, speaking as a type 1, what infuriates me are insurance companies in general. They don't really look at the things that will prevent you from getting the stroke or the heart attack, or at least putting it off a little bit. And in this case, it's insulin. If you keep your sugars within a range, it's been proven that your health will at least go longer before those complications occur. But it seems like they're forgetting all about the preventative measures. And they're like, oh, it's okay. Once you have the heart attack, you're covered. It's just, we're not going to cover you too much from getting the, well, anyway, I go on forever on this. So aside from leaving the country, or at least for the weekend to pick up the medicine, go one border or the other, where do you find the fix? Where do you think the fix is going to happen?
I think the big one is going to be making it easier for companies to produce biosimilars and generating true competition. I think that's going to be a huge one. Obviously, smaller programs, smaller measures. I know that certain companies have discount programs, and I think most people that I've talked to just don't feel like it's enough, you know, getting one prescription a year for $100 and then paying out of pocket for everything else. It's just not feasible for people. It's a discount, but it's not really meaningful to them for the most part, because the people that are really struggling are probably the ones that don't have the good health insurance plan, and, you know, $100 matters to them. So
matters to me too. Definitely. Just want to go on record.
Yeah, it's
you PhDs seem to be doing okay, but we I'm kidding.
No. Actually, let me speak for Maria. No, she could do it's the pay discrepancies. Oh my God! You think with a PhD, it's a golden rope? No.
Well, it costs you a lot to get that. No disrespect meant, Maria.
Yeah, we should have a separate show about student loans, right?
Yeah.
How
that's
about it?
Next week.
That's another one.
Diabetic
right?
Student loans. Oh Lordy.
Yes.
Maria, we can't thank you enough for joining us.
Hope to come back and visit us. We just scratched the surface, so we'll keep you posted. We'd love to have you back.
And now,
awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Maria Musioli, Diabetes Daily. Look it up. Compelling reading.
Gotcha. Thanks again. We'll be back soon on the Diabetic Show. Join us and go to our online too.
Oh, gosh. Let's get the wrap-ups right out of the way. Sorry about that. We've got the website, diabeticshow.com. Facebook. We're getting more and more. And the complaints.
People are finding us.
And the complaints are getting lower.
That's okay.
Well, it's a process.
And thanks to WGTD for having us. We'll be back soon.
It's not a destination. It's a journey. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to The Diabetic Show, featuring Mark Philwood and Dobie Maxwell. For more information or to stay in touch, visit thediabeticshow.com. Until next time.
Support comes from the Mahone Foundation, presenting the 15th annual Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues Festival, Saturday, August 17th, featuring saxophonist Paul Taylor, blues singer Nora Jean Brusso, Natty Nation, and the R&B band Christopher's Project, Also, a Racine Kenosha Firefighters Cook-Off and an Arts and Craft Village. Tickets online at MahoneFund.org. Funding scholarships for economically disadvantaged and academically deserving youth and healthy lifestyle initiatives in communities of color.
Support for WGTD comes from Jack Andrea. Visit jackandrea.com to shop their exclusive hometown collection, including Kenosha t-shirts, sweatshirts,